Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And the thing that I'm going to talk about today is the use of foreign workers in the Third Reich during the Second World War, both coerced and supposedly voluntary. Hitler, during the 1930s, and particularly at the Hossbach Conference in 1937, had been quite explicit about the fact that he wanted a war of plunder. By the way, I have to make something of a mea culpa about the Hossbach Conference. I mentioned it a few weeks ago, and I said mistakenly that Ribbentrop was at the conference. As we all know, he wasn't. It was Konstantin von Neurath, the foreign minister. So I put my hands up. Anyway, the war that Hitler had planned was designed to resolve Germany's almost intractable economic problems throughout the 1920s and 30s, as is experienced, by giving the economy additional capacity via plunder. Now, much of this came from the raw materials that could be appropriated, such as French coal or extracted from pliant alloys such as Romanian oil. But manpower, labour, was also one of the raw materials that Europe could offer the Third Reich. And this enabled the Third Reich to, A, continue operating economically when in excess of 10 million soldiers were fighting, and B, afford Hitler the option of not using large amounts of female labour. The German war machine and the German war industry had really had something of a shaky start. The German war industries weren't ready in 1939, and by 1941, under the leadership of Hitler's favourite SS road building engineer, Fritz Todt, a situation of almost chaos reigned. When Todt died mysteriously in early 1942 and his shoes were filled by Albert Speer, on a journey through the German arms manufacturing industry, found factories that were closed, factories that lay idle. He found parts for trucks being duplicated in all sorts of different factories, and far too many different kinds of trucks, tanks, half tracks, light aircraft, this kind of thing, an unnecessary variety. And the Speer phase of rationalisation of the war industries meant that significantly greater amounts of arms and munitions were produced. But by 1943, there is no way that the productive power of the British Empire, the Soviet Union, and the USA altogether could even be remotely thought to have been eclipsed. But But much of this rationalisation and this new level of munitions output relied on a large pool of cheap or free labour. And the proportion of workers engaged in and manufactures had grown by 159% between 1939 and 1941. And this means by the time that Speer actually came to office, there were few actual workers that still needed to be rounded up and shipped from Western and Eastern Europe. They were already there. It simply meant that they needed to be managed in Speer's eyes in a more efficient manner. The Nazi leader who was tasked with the job of creating a large and pliant workforce was Fritz Sauckel, who became, in March 1942, the general plenipotentiary for labour mobilisation, and he was a direct subordinate of Hitler's. This placed him within the inner circle of the regime. He was quite a different character from Albert Speer. Albert Speer was a very educated, urbane and skillful political operator. Sauckel was a rough, working class, direct and brutal Nazi figure who divided his interests between supplying a labour force and ensuring that the Slavs amongst it particularly were treated as brutally as possible. Again, this shows how racial ideology triumphs over pragmatism, as is so often the case in Nazi Germany, that the people you actually want to do the work for you are the ones that you beat up and starve and batter and brutalise, thus making their effectiveness as labourers pretty minimal. And as I've often argued in this podcast, it is the kind of countervailing tendencies within Nazism that really are its downfall. No ideology can really constrain such contradictions, and more destructive and self-destructive aspects of Nazism eventually by 1945 have won out. By 1942 there were over a million Poles in Germany. The Poles, obviously considered to be racially inferior, had been designated as agricultural labour. Many were coerced into coming to Germany. Others came because of the sheer destitution and poverty in Poland, in large part caused by the Nazi invasion. There were a large number of prisoners of war as well. There were 1.2 million prisoners of war and foreign civilians in Germany in May 1940, and 60% of these worked as farm labourers. There were 700,000 Poles working on the land. There was an attempt initially to force them down the mines, but the poor health that many of the Poles were in meant that this was largely counterproductive, and they simply lacked, due to malnutrition, the physical strength to do the work. And French and British soldiers who were taken prisoner during 1940, as the Wehrmacht raced across France, were often drafted into the munitions industry. However, these prisoners were invariably treated significantly better than their counterparts from the East. This huge influx of, firstly, unskilled agricultural labour, mainly from Poland, prisoners of war set to work, and then skilled labourers, 300,000 coming from Western Europe, 270,000 from Italy, 80,000 from Slovakia, 35,000 from Hungary, caused a huge transition in the nature and makeup of German towns and cities. A nation that had, throughout the 1930s, attempted to pride itself on some kind of racial purity, actually, in the most oppressive way imaginable, became highly cosmopolitan. And at the end of the war, there are huge anxieties about what these angry, hungry, oppressed, and vengeful foreign workers, in some towns, outnumber the indigenous German people several times over. There's a huge anxiety about what they're going to do now that the army, the SS, the Gestapo, and other means of coercing them are gone. Now, if you read Keith Lowe's brilliant book, Savage Continent, one of the best things I've read on the subject of the guest workers or Gastarbeiter in Germany. He goes to great lengths to explain what that explosion of resentment, anger and violence was like for ordinary Germans at the end of the war. It doesn't make for a particularly pretty reading, but it's really, really well worth looking up that book. The foreign workers often seem to confirm the prejudices of German employers and German citizens. They often appear to be rowdy with drunken sing-alongs in the barracks in the evenings. They didn't appear to be particularly good workers. And it's hardly surprising, as wages were kept artificially low, and the workers who had come voluntarily to Germany, particularly from allied countries such as Italy and Hungary, believing that their depressed living standards there could be alleviated by moving to a semi-economic powerhouse, were generally quite disappointed and realised that no matter how hard they worked, there would be little money to, in terms of remittance, to send back to their home countries. And once a foreign worker became bored with the work, tired of the work, or unfulfilled financially, packing up and going home wasn't really quite as simple as that. The vast ocean of labour that Operation Barbarossa presented to the Third Reich came in the guise of Red Army prisoners of war. These were soldiers who could be used in huge, huge quantities for the most menial and dangerous of tasks. Mine work particularly was a possibility. And unskilled labour and meant that skilled German workers could be redeployed. However, the fact that the war in the Soviet Union wasn't a fait accompli, as Hitler had hoped for, meant that the German war economy needed to absorb vast amounts of Russian labour anyway in order to produce the levels of foodstuffs, equipment, munitions, fuel and everything else to keep the Wehrmacht on the march in Russia. The appalling cruelty meted out to Red Army soldiers, mainly via starvation, huge numbers of them were simply put around in kind of corralled by barbed wire in fields in Russia and left to starve. That meant that of the 3,350,000 Red Army troops who had been captured by the end of March 1942, only 5% of those were useful for any kind of war work at all. So again, the slave labour ambitions of Nazi Germany were hamstrung by erratic and contradictory policies. In the Eastern Territories in general, in Poland, Ukraine, the Baltic states, the Nazi regime used a kind of variety of sticks and carrots. They used inducements, they went to Eastern Territories to...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Convince young people that travelling to the Reich to work would be beneficial for them, but they also arrested able-bodied men and women that they could lay their hands on in the countryside. By November 1942, Sarkel believed that he himself had managed to round up over 1.5 million foreign workers and had brought the total figure to 5.75 million. Particularly workers in the West, were in Germany on six-month contracts, and many had to be sent home as being unfit for labour. So that the real figure of effective workers, additional effective workers, was at about 4.65 million. But if you imagine between 1941 and 1944, the German army lost something like about 60,000 men each month on the Eastern Front. And they also lost others in terms of disease and invaliding. So that 60,000 figure isn't just killed and wounded, it's killed alone. And there are desperate manpower shortages in the army by 1942, meaning that the level of the age of conscription has dropped in 1942, which means obviously that more and younger civilian workers wind up on the Eastern Front and not working in munitions factories in Germany. All sorts of deals had to be done. Hitler met with Pierre Laval of the Vichy regime and agreed that 50,000 French prisoners of war could be sent home. That was 50,000 French males that did not have to be fed. In return for 150,000 skilled French labourers who didn't have much say in the matter, as they were sent under a policy of compulsory work service. And this 150,000 was sent with another 250,000 workers, the 150,000 being the skilled ones, and the other 250,000 being unskilled labour. By December 1943, there were 666,000 French workers in Germany, 223,000 Belgians, and 274,000 Dutch. And by the end of the war, a quarter of the entire workforce in Germany was comprised of foreign European citizens, which is a staggering statistic, really, and few economies have really been transformed in such a way in such a short period of time. But as previously mentioned, it meant that the whole shape of Germany, the whole sort of social landscape of Germany during the war dramatically altered. There were camps set up all across Germany, not anything as monstrous as any of the concentration camps or the death camps that existed in the occupied territories. But certainly camps where the movement of labourers was restricted and monitored and governed. There were, in Munich, for example, 120 POW camps were existed, and 286 camps and hostels for civilian workers. And this meant that there were 80,000 available foreign workers in Munich alone. Voluntary foreign workers who had come to Germany in the belief that they might be paid reasonably well would very often work side by side with prisoners or POWs, or see them in different work environments nearby, be able to perhaps look across the road from the factory and see Russian POWs digging ditches. To give you an indication of how much of Germany's war machine required foreign labour, the Krupp steelworks in Essen, for example, ran on 40% of its workforce being foreign and non-voluntary for the most part. Krupp officials made sure that they had the ear of the regime and constantly demanded ever greater levels of skilled workers, and the suspicion that the Nazis eventually have is that they would rather have skilled foreign workers in a place of more poorly trained German workers who are less experienced. This was probably was the case, as capital is pretty colourblind on these kinds of issues, and as the war dragged on, it became more and more essential to get skilled workers in place. The conditions in which workers lived depended really on their origins. Prisoners of war, British and French prisoners of war particularly, were reasonably well housed, and the work they did was not what one would consider to be life-threatening for the most part, though there were accounts of British soldiers sent to the Auschwitz Monowitz site where they were subjected to slave labour. The Russian prisoners of war, however, had to live in particularly dismal barracks with poor sanitation, no bed linen or anything else to make their lives in any way bearable, and obviously the result of that is invariably disease. And as the managers at Krupp quickly noticed, the Soviets were starving and unable to carry out any kind of meaningful labour as a result. There was an immense amount of corruption on the part of camp guards, who siphoned off resources, selling them on the black market, or who hired out workers for their own purposes and pocketed the money that they made for them. Obviously, labour is an immensely valuable resource, and therefore, if you have a supply of it, it's a way of making money. And also, being able to extract money from the workers themselves by controlling the passes for leave and any other perks and privileges was a great way of extracting monies from them. And there was also in the work camps a flourishing trade in prostitutes. And across Germany, a chain of brothels emerged in order to service the foreign workers, but obviously German soldiers used them too. But many of these vices were available only to workers from Western Europe. The Poles and the Soviet prisoners were deliberately brutally treated, and the German working class was encouraged to treat them brutally as well. And there was a particular reason for this. It was important in the eyes of the regime that the working class in Germany saw itself as racially superior to the Poles and racially superior to the Russians, so that there could be none of this much feared notion of solidarity emerging. The Nazis and their abject terror of Bolshevism, believing it to be some kind of cruel Jewish trick. Thought that workers in Germany, if they felt any kind of sympathy towards the Russians, might view themselves as having solidarity with them and might view themselves as having some kind of common cause. And it's actually not a wildly irrational fear on the part of the Nazis of wondering what might happen if a large number of foreign workers on German soil began to interact with Germans in a particular way, because the sheer number of foreign nationals on German soil was so distorting. The Nazis managed to prevent there being the kind of solidarity they fear, but as the regime starts to break down in 1945 and as prisoners find it and workers find it more and more easy to wander around, they have all sorts of interesting interactions with ordinary Germans, so much so that some actually form criminal syndicates with their German contemporaries, and even in some instances take on the Gestapo in the odd shootout. However, it was the poor productivity of Soviet workers, half-starved, suffering from things like tuberculosis and typhus, that encouraged Speer eventually, well, employers to go to Speer and Speer to go to Hitler and say, listen, basically in March 1942, he told Hitler that something had to be done about the conditions of Russian workers. And Hitler, at the height of his racial thinking, even then said, well, yes, I agree, the Russian workers should be treated better in order that they continue to work for the Reich. Now, we shouldn't assume any sentimentality on Hitler's part here. This was pure pragmatism in order to make sure that essential, in his view, war work was done. However, the SS could not really countenance fair treatment or in any way kind of rational or compassionate treatment towards the Russians, and actually went on a rampage of violence against Russian workers from 1942 onwards, primarily because they viewed the large number of Soviet citizens on German soil as a security threat. One reason why they were seen as a security threat was the tendency in some Germans, a natural tendency, to treat them with kindness and compassion. It was a tendency that had not been fully eradicated from Germany by the Nazis. And the number of denunciations that exist for people who give a crust of bread to a Polish worker or a glass of cold water to a thirsty Soviet labourer and result in having not necessarily time in a prison cell, but certainly a good talking to from the Gestapo, is significant. Anyway, I'm going to leave that here, and I hope you've enjoyed that. Please, if you find this useful and interesting, go to our iTunes page, Explaining History, look us up, and give us a good review. 5 stars if you can, and some nice words. Anyway, thanks very much, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.